Yeah. This is Microphone Check, hip-hop from NPR Music. I'm Franny Kelly.
I'm Ali Shahid Muhammad.
And I'm Cole Mega.
What up?
What's good, brother?
What's good, man?
Chilling, happy to be here.
Oh, we're so happy to have you here. You're legendary, man.
I hate that. I think that word is overrated, especially in the presence of a brother like you.
That's fair.
I understand why you say that, but, you know, you got to give it up. And for someone to have been doing what you're doing for the amount of time, you know, skillfully, artfully, then it applies. Unless you got another word to share with me.
Ironically, I've been saying this in every interview when people have been calling me legendary lately, or legend. I really don't feel I deserve it. I'd rather be called a veteran.
Veteran.
If I have,
I like that.
I'd rather be called a veteran because I think that I've endured and I've showed consistency and everything. But there's like, I don't see myself the way I see like you got like I don't see myself in the same vein as a Tribe or as Eric B and Rakim or like PE. Like those guys are legends. So if I consider y'all legends, I honestly, humbly, don't think I belong in that sentence.
Yeah. Okay. I take the, you know, humble road, you know, that you're trying to give go down right now, but yo, you know, I'm saying it because you've done a lot for the art form, and whether, you know, there's certain accolades given from certain sources or whatever or not, it doesn't matter. I think, you know, your dedication and the passion you have in your art is a lot, you know, and it's a lot that people can benefit from, you know, and there's a lot of time placed into it. You can't be around for a quarter of a century doing something as a professional and not be a master at it or considered to be a legend. So you say veteran, we'll ride with that, but I'll say since you're legendary. And
I appreciate
we're
that.
We're happy to have you here, man.
I would say as a fan, you loom large in my understanding of hip-hop, and I get the deference to Tribe and all them, but in some ways, your name never left people's minds, partly because it's a really good name, and partly because your sensibility has stayed intact. Mm-hmm. Although we were just talking, this new album does feel like a departure for you in some ways. Do you hear it like that or no?
I think the new album, I think I try to show growth, and I think my content is different. And I think as artists, one of the most important things about artists is the sincerity. And as you would know, like the not being afraid to express ourselves. And I didn't want to be redundant. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be first of all, I don't live the life that I lived previously. I don't live in Queensbridge. I don't hustle. I'm not in the street life. You know, as you see, I'm with my kids right now. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot of awakenings has happened in my life, and I just wanted my music to reflect that, you know, because at this point in my career, everything that I do now is for legacy. It's really not about the money. A lot of people do it for the money, but I can get a job and get money or do other things. But right now, it's about legacy. It's like to be mentioned amongst the greats, but feel that like I deserve there, like I deserve to be mentioned. You know, like you know. So that's what this album is about. I'm just trying to show growth, and I just really think it was necessary in this time because our genre, when I say genre, our genre, I'm talking about like lyricism and like real conscious hip hop or, you know, the skills that hip hop seems like it's under attack or like trying to like push it out. So it's like I felt like this album was very necessary and I just want to be a soldier for my culture.
Yeah, especially on industry, that track.
Oh, yeah.
Listen to me good. Listen to me good. Is the most important person. Yes. Yes. You are the teacher. Yes.
to their preachers.
Exaggerated tales of hustling. We quick to pass judgment and fail our brothers instead of talking about Laura Hill. Talk about Laura Skill. Truth be told, there may never be a girl as hell. Don't gossip about Dame Dash. Give prop to Dame Head for the rise of Jay and for sign of Kanye. Man, niggas is crazy. That's why we ain't got shit. Rappers hate each other, not the labels that got rich. Don't care about culture, they only want profit. If your album sells slow, bet you get dropped quick. Q-Tip warned us, the industry's toxic. For reference, check out BDP Sex. When Styles made I get high, it was playing all day. When Styles made I'm black, it didn't get enough play. Word. I guess they got a problem with anything positive. Doesn't make sense if it doesn't bring dollars in.
So who is attacking?
I don't know who it is. I don't know if it's the media. I don't know if it's... I think greed has something to do with it. But sometimes it's deeper than... what we see it as. Sometimes it might be government that's pulling strings. And because when you look at the landscape of rap and you look at the people that was creative and innovative and saying stuff that could uplift like the minorities or the poorer areas, those people have all been silenced. Their voices have been silenced. So they have to speak in other ways. So I don't know what's that, but I do know greed has played a symbolic impact in the demise of our culture, because it got to a point where there was new artists that would come to me for advice, like, how do I get on the mixtape? Such and such wants such and such thousand to get on the mixtape. I don't know how to get on the mixtapes. And so you have stuff like that. And then you have, the certain radio guys, they want to get paid for this, your songs get played. And then you got, executives and the companies, they don't look at the creative side of it. They look at the business aspect, which you can't knock them because it's an investment, but it's not that serious of an investment. Mm-hmm. So when you think about it, it's like if you make a creative masterpiece, especially during the 90s, not late 90s, is what really killed rap. Because if you made an incredible album during that time, but it didn't go platinum, it was deemed as a failure. It got to a point where gold was looked at as underachieving, and that's when it all went wrong. Because when artists was first doing it, you could go people, you could sell 350,000 albums and have a successful career back in the days, right. And people were content with making music that everybody could enjoy. It's like it got to a point where people were making embarrassing music, like making fools of themselves, but making so much money that if you even like when we, you know, we from the era when if you was whack. I don't care if you was rich or what you had. Now, and then it became to the point where whack dudes were starting to get pushed into the limelight. And if you say something about their whackness, then you're a hater.
Right.
So the word hater had to become a shield. And then it all went downhill from there. It's greed. One of the biggest things I heard our culture was greed. Mm.
So you're saying, like, to go platinum, basically, you have to cross over in some way.
Definitely.
And so once that becomes, like, the standard, then everybody has to make records for the mainstream.
Definitely. It depends on what you want to do as an artist, because some artists don't get it. There's some artists that are independent that are living well beyond people's expectations. You got brothers like Tech N9ne and E-40 have more money than a lot of guys that are going platinum on majors. Mm-hmm. And then... you know, it comes a time where you just got to have it depends how much integrity you have as a person, because the industry is a piggyback thing. Like, if they see 50 Cent's success is a perfect example. When 50 Cent blew up, all of a sudden it became like back in the days, the mandate was be good. Yeah, if you was nice on the mic, you had a chance. When 50 Cent blew up, it's like labels started pushing artists to work out. Like, everybody had to get Diesel and stuff like that. Or, like, when Foxy Brown and Kim, their success was, like, crazy for women. Because after that, it was, like, all the sisters that was positive in that, you never heard them. Like, I've literally heard people at labels say, oh, we got to get her ass. Talking about other girls or, you know, you got to do this or look sexy. It became that instead of the art, you know. So the industry is just incredible.
Well, I think that, you know, you're saying that this album you're more focused on legacy. There's something that's definitely apparently different, but I think there's like a fiber of similarity in terms of like your drive. I think from your previous albums, it always seemed like there was a sense of like teaching, but you know, not in a preachy way. I think it comes across like, yo, this is the life, you know, this is what I'm dealing with, and this is how I'm putting it out there. And it was also, you know, said with a certain amount of integrity for yourself, who you are as a man, you know, like having honor and things of that nature. So it feels like this record just has that same spirit, but it's refined from a different type of experience. And so it's interesting, you know, that you get to a song like Industry in the way I think you present it, you know, now versus like maybe some of your other experiences in the music industry and how it came across. And I think the way that, you know, the Industry song is on this new album, first of all, I celebrate you for it because we need to hear it right now in this climate and what's going on musically. But often people say that, you know, a rap game, they use the term the rap game, is synonymous with the drug game. And I think, you know, some of your music sort of articulates that, but I think with Industry, you touched on something that's it's the life of the artist. I think the way you broke it down to me reflects how governments play with other governments and how our lives are not valued. You know, how people start wars to make money, and you broke that down. Not speaking about wars, but just the industry and the relationship for the artists in terms of the record companies. And I think that was pretty bold and dope.
It definitely was. It definitely was a huge risk.
Yeah. Why? Can you talk about that a little bit? Like, you knew it was risky, and you, I mean, there's how much do you care about that?
There's a lot of risk on this album. I knew Industry was a risk, but I knew when you were an artist and you're trying to send a message, you don't want to sound preachy, as he said, because sometimes people don't want to hear that. They just want to be entertained, or they want to hear what they want to hear. But one of the things that benefits me as an artist is what they call street credibility or whatever, is my reputation from the street or whatever is authentic, and everybody knows that.
That's why I say you legend, man.
I don't even try to glorify it either. So if I'm talking, street dudes will listen, or the younger guys will listen. And then one of the most important things that I did was take responsibility as a man and as an artist. Because hip-hop in itself, a lot of things indoctrinate. Hip-hop is a thing that indoctrinates. People want to be like it, and people want to be like the people that they admire. I've met dozens of people that have my quote, my lyrics tattooed on them, which blew my mind. If you look on Twitter right now, there's a guy on there talking about, I'm gonna send you the picture of the tat today. Like, that's how I mean, yeah. Like,
that's banana.
So it's like, when I started seeing the impact that I had on people, like, people know that I came from jail. People knew that, so I didn't have to sing about it or brag about it in songs. And it's nothing to brag about. Jail is for suckers.
Well, also because Nas talked about
exactly.
You being in jail on his
One
song.
Love was like, let the world, exactly. Exactly.
What's the letter I got from my man Nas, man? Word is born. What up, kid? I know shit is rough doing your bit. When the cops came, you should have slid to my crib. Fuck it, black, no time for looking back is done. Plus, congratulations, you know you got a son. I heard he looks like you. Why don't your lady write you? Told her she should visit, that's when she got hyper. Flipping, talking about he acts too rough. He didn't listen, he be ripping while I'm telling him stuff. I was like, yeah, shorty don't care. She a snake too, fucking with them niggas from that fake crew that hate you. But yo, guess who got shot in the dome piece? Jerome's niece on her way home from Jones Beach is bugged. Plus little Rob is selling drugs on a dime, hanging out with young thugs that all carry nines. And nighttime is more tripe than ever. What up with poor Mega? Did you see him or y'all together? If so, then hold a foot down, represent to the fullest. Say what's up to Herb, Ice and Bullet. I left for half a hundred in your commissary. You was my nigga when push came to shove.
One what?
One love.
One love. One love.
So, me coming home from jail and making it in the music industry, that was a ray of hope for a lot of convicts. Because when you're in jail, you're taught that you're a convict, and you're reminded of it by the COs and by the system, and you're taught your likelihood of making it is very low and that you're going to be nothing. So when people see me come home and get a record deal, that inspired a lot of people. So I wanted to inspire people in other ways. And I know little dudes that wanted to be like me. So when I started making albums, I was telling people about the pitfalls of the street rather than just glorifying it. So now people respect me so much for what I've done in the independent game and, you know, in the industry. So it's like I'm doing the same thing I did in the streets. I dropped jewels, but now I'm trying to navigate you through the industry instead of navigating you through the streets. So the song industry was important to me because I get tired of the exploitation of our music and especially of the artists. Like, when you look at the rap industry, there's a lot of stories that don't have happy endings. Mm-hmm. And there's people that do little to nothing that thrive the most. There's people that do little to nothing. There's people that literally got in the industry because they was cool with somebody and because they brown knows the right people because they was in the right circle and they became executives.
Yeah.
Whereas you have a person like Lord Professor. Lord Professor never had a job as an A&R. That's a crime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Think about it. Mm-hmm. His album Breaking Atoms was groundbreaking. Mm-hmm. His influence on producers is he introduced the game to Nas. Mm-hmm. He's done so much that any label that really cares would have gave him a shot as an A&R.
Right.
Like so it's like a lot of my heroes don't get the credit they deserve. I mean, it started bothering me. And then I just wanted to speak and I wanted people to stop selling the illusion. Like, even with the independent game, you could get jerked. You got labels like Koch that'll tell people, oh yeah, you get 60-40. You don't get 60-40. You don't get 60-40. It's not 60-40. It all is not fair, you know? So I wanted to be the one on a song like Industry to express the truths to artists. That's why I said Beef DVD is on BET. So every mm-hmm. artist who was on it was beefing for free. You know, like, mm-hmm. well, if you listen to that song, I made sure I said no disrespect intended.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I know he got beats. That's why I said about QD3. And everything I'm saying makes sense. There's no animosity or vengeance in my words. It's self-evident. So I just wanted to make self-evident music. And I took that risk. And at the end of the day, you know why I was able to take that risk? Because what could happen? I've already been blacklisted before. And, you know, I already said freak it and left the majors and started made a lane for myself. So it's like you can't independent me and you can't blacklist me independently, or you can't blacklist me to the fans. I'm going to always find a way. So I'm willing to take the risk, you know. So that's just one of the risks that I took on the album.
I liked your mention of shareholders on that song also, because okay. that kind of gets at the, like, what you're really up against.
Mm-hmm.
If a corporation is, the law is that the shareholders have to profit, then how do we change what they value?
Exactly. And, you know, there's a lot of things. You know, one of the biggest misconceptions, one of the big things that really bothered me about the industry, period, is often in life, when we see things aren't as equal as they should be or fair as they should be, we often fight for change or for regulation, et cetera, et cetera. It bothers me to this day that record companies make at least, what, $10 off every record? Or maybe $8 if it's discounted. You make so much money off a record, but an artist gets less than, not even a dollar. Not even a half of a dollar. If you get a half of a dollar, you got a good deal. So it's like the profit margin for the artist as opposed to the company is totally unfair. And it's like, even at the end of the day, when you got artists like, an artist goes platinum and he's happy and they'll make sure there's pictures of him with his platinum plaque, but whose glory is that? Mm-hmm. You got a plaque, that's it. That plaque isn't worth any money. Every album that sells a million copies generates $10 million, close to $10 million. There's a lot of people we know that generated $10 million and more that we've seen on TV, bankrupt or this or that, and they're not all reckless spending.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, There's a lot of inconsistencies in the industry. So I just wanted to say freak it and stir up the hornet's nest.
So why do you why keep making music? Why stay in this industry then?
Because I'm not in the industry. I'm on the outer street. I mean, see, me making music independently, the way I do it, I deal with any companies I want, or I deal with I put my stuff out digital. Mm-hmm. With it, you know, I always find ways to do things my own way. When I was on, back in the, when my first record deal was with Violator Records, rest in peace, Chris Lighty. And that's where I learned about the industry. I was on the shelf, you know what I'm saying? So during my time on the shelf, I did something that wasn't being done at that time. You could do the research. No artist was putting out mixtapes without no album. They, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't heard of. You might see a Best of Biggie, but I made my first mixtape like 1997 probably. You know, by the time we did Survivor the Illest Tour, my mixtape was old. Like, and people, when we did Survivor the Illest Tour, I was scared to go. I'm going to be honest. I was scared. Like, when we went to Detroit, Chicago, and all those, I was scared to perform because I thought people was going to boo me because they didn't know my music. I was like, nobody's going to know this shit. Then when we got there, I was one of the most popular acts that night, and I was blown away. People were like, we got your album. I was like, I don't got an album. They were showing me the mixtape. Mm-hmm. So that, after that, I started making more mixtapes, and then that became a trend. But very few people give me my credit for that. But it's the truth. So I found that lane. I made mixtapes before it was done. And same thing when I got off of Violator. I had a situation. I could have signed with TVT during the time when Little John was there. That label was big. But my whole thing is this. When you're dealing with corporations, you're dealing with schedules, et cetera, et cetera. I didn't feel like getting on a label. I wanted my album to come out soon. So I knew if I signed with them, I would have to be fit into their schedule, et cetera, et cetera. And I was just on the shelf for 4 years. I didn't have waiting time. So I put out my album independently, and I thrived. I was getting phone calls from Interscope and other people. You know, I didn't want to go back after that. So I was like, freak it. You know, I could sell 50,000 records and be more happy than somebody that sold 850,000 records. So I was like, this is it.
Do you recommend for artists that are starting out that they go more of an independent route?
If an artist is starting out, I think indie is good. I think it depends. See, if an artist is starting out, like if a label's going to make you Eminem, then go for it. You know what I'm saying? Because it doesn't matter. Like, he's so successful. Like, his success is so gigantic that it he's his own entity now,
right.
So he could quit that and do his own thing now. So if they're gonna blow you up, then go to major then. But if you build yourself, like say you're a new artist, and then you start making your own mixtapes and you develop your own buzz and you're big and people are flooding to you, you could be successful without it. Like what's the guy name? Mac Miller. I mean, mm-hmm. Is that his name? Mac Miller.
Mm-hmm.
Majors was trying to holler at him. He's like, freak y'all. He went indie. And he's still good, you know what I'm saying? So independent is definitely the route. It's an excellent route. You know, I wouldn't recommend majors unless they're going to substantially pay you or unless they want to do something that's groundbreaking and give you a fair deal. If they say, well, we're going to go 50-50 with you, do it. Or even 60-40, 80-20 even, because 40 cents off an album is not cool. It's nearly impossible to make your money back. And this is another thing. Anytime somebody gives you a loan, it's recoupable. Any loan that you get, you finance a house, a car, any kind of a loan from a bank, once you pay off, once that debt has been paid, you get the deed or you get the title. Once you get a record deal, once you repay that, you still don't get a fair part. Like, listen, there should be amendments.
Yeah, you don't own it.
You don't own nothing. You don't even own your name.
Yeah.
They could drop you off a label. This is the thing that hurts me too. I've known artists that label really didn't care about them. They was on, you know, they pushed them to the side, or they maybe even had plans to drop them. And then, unfortunately, maybe something happens and the artist dies. All of a sudden now, that label loves this artist again. Now this artist is making money. He's generating funds, and his family is barely getting anything because his cut was so small. And then y'all was about to drop him. So it's like an artist gives his all, and the artists die, and they really have nothing to show for it. There's a lot of artists who die whose families are struggling right now. You would think the label would say, all right, let's give them, you know, let's cut them a check. Just, you know, but they don't. It's like, so many, it's so many inconsistencies in the game that it's just baffling. That's why, you know, I just wanted to be sincere on this album.
Ali mentioned honor in that track with Raekwon, honorable. Mm-hmm. When you say it's the streets that made me wise and honorable, I mean, can you explain sort of how that functions, how you learned that?
I mean,
what that means to you?
The streets raised me to be wise. I think the streets raised me to be observant. I can't say that the streets taught me everything educationally, because I did respect reading. Mm-hmm. So I did, you know, read books, and I did go to school. I did drop out, unfortunately.
In life, we faced with obstacles. We want to achieve dreams that might seem impossible. The eyes don't lie, look at mine, acknowledge truth. The streets raised me to be wise and honorable. Wise and honorable. The streets raised me to be wise and honorable. Wise and honorable. The streets raised me to be wise and honorable. Beef and money don't mix. Invest in peace. I pay dues in the street. Respect is my receipt. Truth will set you free, except with police. Be aware when you sleep, you can rest in peace. I elevate poetically, I'm incredibly deep. Never fall till you fall complete. Stay on your feet. If you anxiously waited for me and Ray on the beat, be gracious. Understand patience is key. I once needed direction, now I'm facing the east. To give praise like Muhammad. Indeed, Allah, open my eyes. I'm watching my surroundings. Sharks and piranhas survive in the warmest waters. Mama Santa won't allow me to acknowledge doubters. Couldn't conceive. I was built to prosper since a teen, wearing diamond jewelry in a project. If you get knocked, how's it gonna seize your apartment?
When I went to jail, they put me in a box. I got into trouble, so I was in a box. And the box is smaller than this room. Matter of fact, if the box is half the size of this room, you're in a good box. So I was in a box, and when you're in a box, you don't have no TV, nothing. You're just in your room, and then they give you your food, but they give you books. So one of the first books that I read, the first book that I read in there, besides, like, Bible or whatever, the first book that I read was Autobiography of Malcolm X.
They gave you that book?
Yeah. Yeah. So that was life-altering.
Seems counterproductive for them.
Yeah, really. Yeah. I think God gave me that book.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I think that was a blessing. Because when I got that book, and I seen how he said he was illiterate, or pretty much illiterate, taught himself to read in jail, and read constantly, and ended up getting, you know, his academics up. I mean, obviously, he became intelligent, obviously, from his speeches. And so he bettered himself from being in jail. He didn't use jail as the end of the road. He used it as the start of a new road. So after that, that motivated me. So I started going to the law library for my case, because I was innocent for what I was in jail for. So I started going to the law library instead of going to the gym and all that stuff. And then I started to take a GED course. Took my GED course. I passed my GED. I got my GED. Then after that, I took college courses. You know, so in that sense, the streets, the valleys, you know, the pros and cons benefit each other. The negativity of me being in the streets enabled me to reach positivity by, unfortunately, going to jail. But jail opened my eyes and made me read and made me get my GED, et cetera, et cetera. Because if I was home, I wouldn't have did it. I didn't have time to. I was too busy trying to sell drugs and et cetera, et cetera. So the streets taught me that. The streets taught me also loyalty, et cetera, et cetera. Because sometimes you don't find out who your friends are until you're in a situation or until they don't need you anymore. So the streets wised me. So that's why I said that in the song. But, you know, I think life, not just the I said that in the song because it sounds good in the song, to be honest with you. But life has made me wiser. It's not just the streets. It's a lot of things. It's life. It's experience. It's belief in God. It's all that has made me wiser. You know, so I'm very observant, and you know, I just take it all in. I just take it all in as an artist. I think artists are like sponges, man. And then what we squeeze out in the, out the sponge is our art, and it's for people to appreciate, you know. So I just hope people appreciate it.
I appreciate it. You know, it's interesting because Franny asked you, you know, why I keep doing it, and I was wondering the same thing in terms of inspiration, mm-hmm. you know, and this is before I had a chance to listen to the new album. I'm like, you know, for someone who has, like, I feel like your records have gotten better and better with each album, you know, just in terms of your content, your style is pretty much always been consistent from, like, you know, day one. You remind me of Kool G Rap in certain aspects of your cadence and flow and attack, you know, and confidence of, you know, just rhyming, you know. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like even sonically, the albums have just gotten, like, stronger and stronger. Mm-hmm. And but I have wondered, like, what motivates you? And then I heard this new album. I was like, oh, yeah, life.
Got it.
You know, you tell me, you hear, you know, but what motivates you still after how many albums is it? Like, is this like your...
This would be the fifth real album. This would be the fifth album. And then I got a compilation, Legal Hustle. That's six. And mixtape. So I would say it's like my sixth.
So 25 years or more, you know, that many albums. So what's your motivation?
To be honest with you, like, the years that I was in the game, I feel like I underachieved. I'm hard on myself because in the 90s, I didn't put out no album. So I was just there. My first album came out in 2001. So that's another reason why I don't give myself the legend stamp, because I feel like I could have did more. Like, I'm mad at myself. I took five years to make a new album. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I really, one of the things that I promised myself is that my daughter is going to have her father in her life. I didn't want to. You know, I know a lot of artists that's on the road all the time, and you know how it is. So I wanted to be a part of my kid's life, and it was a sacrifice I made, and I hope she appreciates it when she gets older.
You don't hear many fathers saying that.
Yeah, I definitely, because I didn't, for there's two reasons that I wanted to be in my daughter's life. Because one, my mother died when I was young, and I missed her. I missed her more as an adult. There's days in my 30s, in my late 30s, that I cried more than I did when I was preteen. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So as you grow older, you see the values of life more. You see the values of certain things. I know the value of a father figure, the things that a father instills in his daughter. So I promised myself that I was going to be a better father than I had. You know, no disrespect to my dad, because I love him, and he tried. He did what he could. But I just wanted my daughter's life to be better than mine. So that's one of the risks that I took. But another thing that motivates me, the thing that motivates me the most is the fans. Hmm. I love the music, too. Like, I'm a hip-hop head. Large Professor, he teased me about that before, because he's like, I didn't know you was a head like that, man. Like, I get excited off of dope beats. Like, I start screaming, like, oh, my God. Like, I get hyped. Like, it's still 88 or something. But the thing that is nothing like the... Like, you know, there's no high. I don't even get high like that. But there's no high in the world like the adulation on stage. Hmm. There's nothing like it for me. Like, I feel like I'm in a arena and I'm a gladiator that just won it, that's about to win it. Like, I could be tired, and when the roar of the crowd just wakes me up. And people be like, damn. So it's like, I love the fans. The fans have expanded my mind in so many ways. Not just artistically, but globally, appreciating things more. Because when I was writing my music early in my career, I was writing it for the hood only. I didn't think there would be anybody else that appreciated my music or understood my music. And then in 2001, I'm in Foot Locker in Boston, and a white girl comes up to me. She's a short white girl. She wears a Foot Locker. I'm asking about some sneakers. She's like, oh, my God, you're Cormega. So I'm like, how the fuck she know who I am? And I'm like, how she know who I am? So I'm like, she's one of them cool ones that hang out with the brothers, probably. So now I do a show in Boston, and it's like the crowd is majority white. So I'm like, okay, maybe somebody else is here. You know, maybe somebody else is here, and I'm like the opening act. They know all of my words. Mm-hmm. So now I'm like, wait a minute. So now I'm meeting Oriental people. Oh, my God, you call me a da-da-da-da-da. So I'm meeting people of different cultures and backgrounds and stuff. So I'm like, I'm fascinated that they know my stuff, because I thought it was only for the hood. I didn't know it was global or worldwide. So it's the love that you get from the fans that makes you want to do it more. Because a lot of our peers have quit because of the bull crap that's involved in the industry. They just straight up quit. It's not like they quit because they lost their skill, or they just gave up because they got tired. They got tired and worn down from the industry. And that could have been me. But it's people like, when you hear fans, sometimes your fans are your friends more than your friends.
Yeah.
There's people like, yo, when people come up to you like, yo, your music has changed my life, or I was going through a hard time in my life and your music helped me get by, like, that does something to you. And it's like, you know, people in jails writing me like, yo, man, you know, I couldn't stop. And then the love that you get from them, and then you meet people with your tattoos on them. I'm in London, somebody is like, oh my God, I love you. This dude brings his father to the studio, his father hugs me. It's like, the fans are very important, man. It's like, it's essential, man. And I always tell artists, sign every autograph. Like, make everybody feel like they're a part of what you do. Don't act funny with them, you know what I'm saying? Because at the end of the day, the fan, if you look at it from a business aspect, your fan is really your boss. And your longevity depends on job performance. Hmm. It's the same thing. The better you are at your job, in your field, the you get promoted. The worse you are, you get demoted. When you cross over, like, there's some brothers that are dope MCs, but then every chance they get, they try to make a record like whatever's popping, whatever's hot. And then the fans get tired of you. And next thing you know, I could probably name close to 100 rappers that were hotter than me, or whatever the term you want to use, when my album first came out. And out of that 100, maybe 15 to 20 of them are still doing music, or still, like, you know, there's artists that was bigger than me that used to act funny. And now it's like, I'm such a non-grudge holding dude. I know people that was funny style with me back in the days that call me for features now, and I'm done. Like, whatever. You know what I'm saying? Or people that was funny style now, they're out the game. They can't even sell records independently. So I take all this in stride, and I know it's a blessing, because nothing is old. You know what I'm saying? It's a blessing, and this is God willing. You know, it's like a... It didn't have to happen, so I take everything in stride, man. And so, the thing that keeps me going the most is the fans, and me knowing that. I know now that I'm not going anywhere. Like, I'm here for the long term. I'm not a short. If this is a hotel, I'm not having a short stay. I'm here for the long term. The fans are there with me consistently and loyally, and my job is to find out why they're still here with me and continue giving them exactly what made them stay.
Well, I feel like this album, you know, like I said, I didn't know. And before listening to the album, I was just curious, like, why, what is he, you know, what's the motivation? Then I heard the album, I was like, oh, it's all on this album.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like, I feel like, you can't really measure this, and, you know, don't take it the wrong way, but I feel like, yo, if this was like your first or second album, mm-hmm. I'd be like, yo, his son got a long career ahead of him. And I know that may sound kind of, you know, crazy and twisted considering, like, your mm-hmm. you know, the resume, but in listening to it, it was so refreshing. I'm like, if this was somebody's first album, it's a damn good album. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's just like, where do you go after this? You know, mm-hmm. like, you look forward to the freshman album. The sophomore album.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next and the next and the next. Mm-hmm. So it's, I'm really happy about this record, just in the sense of where you've come from and how much I think you've schooled people. And it's interesting because you are very connected with your fans. You're saying you were making records for the street, but, you know, it extended beyond this. And I think your music, it helps people who may be struggling with their environmental situation in terms of, like, economics or home life or mm-hmm. whatever. But I feel like this record is a culmination of all of that, but it has like a new feeling of, I don't know what it is, maybe new experience. Like you said, you have a different life now, but it still contains the same amount of information, you know, the experiences of the previous. So it makes me look forward to the next, and not trying to put any pressure on you. I really see, like, you know, another couple more decades worth of music. You know, just hearing the content and the charge and the way you just, like, industry is a huge song, obviously, and that goes without saying, but there's just so much more in depth to what's behind it and everything else. So I'm just looking forward to it.
I appreciate it. Like, hearing that from you, that's one thing that, like, the love that I'm getting from my peers lately in the last few years has been, I don't even know how to word it. Like, hearing that from you is like, I don't even know what to say, man. Like, I'm just humble. I'm really thankful for those words. Mm-hmm. Like, I really appreciate it, man. Like, I think early in my career, I had a chip on my shoulder. I felt like the world was sleeping on me. And now it's to the point where Rakim has let me perform at one of his shows. And as I'm performing, he's ad-libbing my words. And I was like, hold up. Is this Rakim singing my words? Like, I was if you would have said, yo, man, I'm going to give you 50,000. If somebody would have gave me 50,000 right there, it wouldn't have exceeded that feeling of having Rakim sing my words. Or when Chuck D says, your new music is like God. He heard this album, like some of this album before. So it's like, the love that I'm getting right now is, like, so crazy. Like, I'm a little emotional right now. So it's, like, I can't even explain it. Like, I'm just, alhamdulillah, you know? Mm-hmm. I can't explain it. I can't explain it.
It's funny. There's two things. I don't want to lose my where I'm at. I want to ask you about your relationship with Large Professor. But okay, just to go back, you said you used to rhyme you had a chip on your shoulder. Mm-hmm. And it kind of it came off that way. So since you brought it up, let's just go back to that a little bit. Because one of the things I felt is that I'll use the word, the dismissal mm-hmm. from the firm, mm-hmm. I think set you off on a path that gave your life as an artist purpose. Mm-hmm. And I think had that situation not happened, only the creator knows what our lives would be if certain things, you know, would not happen.
Exactly.
But it kind of comes off to me like, I don't know, you know, you can tell us if you want to talk about your experience and all that. I was kind of happy, you know, fast forwarding now that your life kind of took that path because I think it came out in the music in a really good way. Mm-hmm. Like how you vented and how you expressed it. Mm-hmm. It was dope. You know what I mean? I think it took the other experiences that you went through and, you know, growing up and stuff that you talk about in your story and just living in the life. Mm-hmm. I think that particular like moment was just like, it set you up for everything else.
I agree.
Mm. I mean, no further detail.
No, I think, all right, so I think when the firm thing, that's like another thing with my industry thing. Basically, if I'd have signed a production deal, I would have been in the firm. But Steve Stout is incredibly financially rich. But he's not morally rich. So there were certain things that Stout used to say that really bothered me. Like, he told my man Biz, you might know Biz, because Biz used to be like my manager and he used to be at Violate all the time. So one day he told Biz, if Mega wasn't part of the firm, do you think people would even care? Like, he made it, so I could have signed a production deal after that, but I wouldn't respect myself. Like, I got to look in the mirror when I go home. So basically, certain things people say makes you think about yourself. Like, do I suck? Like, that's basically what he's saying. Like, you suck. Like, you're cool. You're on because you're down with us. Like, or people like you because of us. So I wanted to prove him wrong. So I could have signed it, but I didn't. And then, you know, there's a lot of complications. Like, minor bullcrap. But I was like, I can't do it. I wouldn't respect myself. He straight up said that. And he also said, the last song you're going to hear Mega on is Affirmative Action Remix. So me being oblivious to the ways of the industry, I'm laughing in my head. Like, he's bugging. I'm on La Familia. Like, he don't know what he's talking about. I'm on La Familia. So when La Familia came out, I wasn't on it. So they said my verse got erased by accident.
What?
So, yeah. So if you do your research, there's a song called La Familia with Cormega, and then there's another one with Nature on it. So they took me up and put Nature on it. Shout out to Nature too. That's my man. He's on the new album, mm-hmm. as you guys know.
Yeah.
And so I really didn't like Steve during that time. I respect him now, but I really didn't like him at that time. So I wasn't gonna sign it. So that you know set a chain of events into motion, and there was a song that came out. One day they was in the studio, and there was a freestyle that came out. I was on a Clue tape, and back in the days, Clue was bigger than I don't know what. Like, a Clue tape was more popular than people's albums. So there was a particular song, and Nature, you know, he went at me on the song. He's like, saying you with the firm, how's that when you got your spot jacked, you know? So then I responded, and that's how the whole thing started, you know? So I went at him and Nas, because I was like, I'm going to go at the boss and the worker. So that's what my mind frame was back then. But the media, and you know, not just the media, because there's people that was just on their side. You know, they had more strength than me in the industry. So there's just people saying, oh, Mega was just mad because he wasn't in the firm. That wasn't true at all, because at the end of the day, if that diss to song about me never came out, I never would have made a diss song at all. There never would have been one. And you could do research. His was out first. Nature will even tell you that. Nature's my man. Me and him is very close. Actually, I can show you my phone right now. There's a text from Nature to me from today. You know what I'm saying? So So if they never made that song dissing me, there never would have been a diss record towards them. So the media would have never been able to say Meg was mad, that's why he made that song. That wasn't true. I made a song responding to their initial diss. So then that was that. Then when the Firm album came out, and when the source was like the Bible, the very first word in the write-up, if you do the research on it, was saying something about how my Cormega is missed on this album. That was my vindication right there. I felt so good just reading that part, because it's like, okay, so I'm not the weak link in the chain. You know what I'm saying? So, after that, I just started going hard. I had to do my own thing. And I think that firm situation was one of the reasons I was on the shelf, because Trackmasters and Stout was so powerful. I can't say Trackmasters. Not like Trackmasters was trying to stop me, but Stout runs Trackmasters. So Trackmasters was the go-to producers. They was executive producer of Foxy's album. It's power. Think about it. Look at the firm. Steve Stout managed Nas. The executive produced Foxy Brown's album, did a lot of production on AZ's album, and Nature was signed to what? Trackmasters. So I was the only one that wasn't financially benefiting them. And then, look at this. When I was thinking about signing a production deal, it was greedy. It was like, my record deal was for $250,000, which you was in the game. At that time, that was astronomical. You know what I'm saying? But if you're charging me, first of all, Steve Stout wanted $50,000 to executive produce my album, straight up, right? So that's $50,000. So you minus $50,000 for $250,000, that leaves you with $200,000, right? Okay, mind you, I got to pay my lawyer, and my manager gets a cut too. And I've only been home for like close to a year. I need things myself. So it's not $250,000 anymore. So let's just say it's $200,000. So then you want $50,000 to be executive producer. That leaves you with $150,000. So I'm thinking, he wants $50,000. I'm thinking, is the Beats included with that? So we're going to do, I think, $20,000 a beat. That's going to be like the hookup price. That was a good price, I guess, back then, because Trackmasters was getting a lot of money for production. But think about it. If you doing, and back in those days, which you know, people used to do a bunch of songs. That might not even make the album, but that don't mean that the producer don't want to get paid.
Right.
So you set me up to fail from the gate. You know what I'm saying? So what's your gripe with me? Your gripe with me is that I've always been a smart artist. Like, I could get a copy of my old... God bless Chris Lighty. My first record contract was from Chris Lighty. It was a fair deal. I had, like, I think I had 14 points, which is a lot for an artist, mm-hmm. which really ain't a lot in period, total, but for an artist, that's a lot. And I had all my publishing. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
Rest in peace, Chris Lighty. That's a fact. So here you are. I'm an artist. I'm on point. I'm on top of my game. I was reading about the industry in those little books, and I got a good lawyer. I had Kenny Mycelis at the time. So I own my publishing, and I got a great points. Now I'm going to sign a production deal with you, and the production deal I signed with you is going to eat up my recording budget because I didn't want Trackmasters to do my whole album. Mm-hmm. I like Trackmasters, and I know what type of songs y'all going to do. Y'all going to do those singy, puffy type songs, but I don't really want to do a bunch of those songs. I want Havoc beats and R&S or like RZA types. I want that too. So we had a conflict of interest right there. So long story short, I got dismissed or whatever they want to say. I wasn't in the group. But after that, I went hard to preserve my name. And the fans responded to me. Like, right now, I could do a show with any... I could do a... When Nas brought me out to Nokia Theater, it was a surprise show. This was during me and Nas' beef, or whatever you want to call it, during those years. So nobody expected me to be there. So Nas is singing One Love. He's like, what's up with Cormega? Did you see him on Y'all Together? And then I walk out on stage. It was playing by me and Nas. Go to YouTube. You can see it. The crowd went ape shit. I've never... If you look at when Nas came out of Jay-Z's thing or when Nas brought me out, see the reaction from the crowd, they went more crazier when me and Nas reunited than when Jay-Z and Nas reunited. They went, yo, listen to the audio. If I'm lying, I will buy you guys lunch for a week straight. Yo, I want you to listen to the audio. You're gonna hear men going, ah, screaming like girls. Like, dude, yo, there was dudes. I've never heard dudes tell me, yo, Mega, I got goosebumps. Mm-hmm. So when me and Nas reunited, that just was powerful. So I was like, so it just made us both like, wow, think of what could have been. So it did. So you're right. I think that made me stronger. And I think I'm one of those Reggie Miller types. Like that game when the Knicks was winning, they was up by a couple of, it was over. The Pacers conceded, but then Spike Lee did the choke sign and motivated Reggie and they beat the Knicks. That's what happened with me. Like, mm-hmm. I just get motivated by certain things. So that's what happened. And I go hard. Like, I wasn't pampered by the industry. So I never knew how to be a pampered sport. I'm willing to go get it. Like, I drove to New Jersey, parked, jumped on the New Jersey Transit to Penn Station, and came here. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a grinder. So as long as you grind, you combine somebody that's willing to grind with someone that's willing to not compromise his craft, and you have a powerful...
You got a soldier beyond.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Warrior.
I mean, and also I remember the time when you were beefing with Nas and the fact that he responded, mm-hmm. that he would respond like on God's son, like at that time, you know, everybody was like, oh, well, we have to pay attention.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it wasn't like, yeah, you made him answer.
Let me tell you how real of a person I am. When he responded, he definitely had to respond because I had like one of the realness, that's when the realness was out. So it's not like you could say, well, I'm not going to answer because I had like one of the most popular albums of the year, bar none. I mean, I was the number one Heat Seeker in America for 2 weeks in a row. And Heat Seeker is not independent. Heat Seeker is whatever. Like,
yeah.
Bob Hope could have came out with an album or whoever, Elvis, whatever. If there was a new artist, they would have been a Heat Seeker. Like, I was the number one Heat Seeker in America for 2 weeks in a row with The Realness. Like, it was making so much noise. So he responded. And then, let me show you how much a man that I am. When he responded, my record sales increased 70%. Like, I could have milked that beef for years. I stopped the next year. You know why? You can even look at my old interviews. I say I'm not going to let, because the media started trying to pimp me because controversy sells. So there'll be magazines that'll call me and only ask me, they'll call me just so they could get a question about Nas. Like, I don't know what happened with him. There was a lady named Serena Kim from Vibe Magazine, and then she wanted to do an interview with me, so I was like, cool. So I was going to do an interview, but she was like, so tell me something about Nas, like something from back in the days. I said, he made Illmatic. It's one of the greatest albums ever. She's like, no, no, not that. Something else. So she wanted Dirt. So I didn't want to do the interview. And me and her had fallen out because of that. Like, literally. So, you know, I wasn't involved for a while after that. So, and then there's been times when other magazines I won't mention because I still do business with them. Now, I mean, I'm involved again now, but there's been other magazines that's big, not Source, that was like, yo, we'll do a feature Omega by Nas. So I'm like, I don't want to do that. I'm tired of people just calling me for that. Like, when y'all, when an artist is looked at like that, it's like you're gimmicking me. Like, there's not more to, like, it's like you don't respect my craft. Like, I think there's more to Core Mega than just having beef with another artist. And at the end of the day, I got more attachment to that artist than I do to you. Like, when his mother died, I was sad. Like, we got history. So at the end of the day, I'm not proud that we had beef. It's not something that I'm proud of. So I could have milked it. I could have milked that beef and kept beefing and kept beefing and made more money, but I didn't because I don't want that to be a part of my legacy. I'm not going to, as I said, I'm not going to be the Frazier to his Ali. Mm. I'm going to be the greatest Cormega that I can be without that. So, you know, and that's one of the things that I've done. I've tried to not rely on controversy or not rely on features. I don't want to be reliant. Only thing that I rely on is two things. That I wake up every day and see a new day by the blessing of God and the fans. Those are the two things that's going to get me through.
Well, you know, journalism is just another industry.
Exactly. So,
works similarly.
Yeah.
Honestly.
And controversy sells.
Yeah.
So it's like, but after a while, it's like, okay, you want me to talk about this guy. At the end of the day, and some magazines are incredible because they'll ask you the question, but they'll just show your word. They won't show the question. Mm-hmm. So then you start looking like a hater. And I was like, I'm not going out like that.
Yeah.
Especially, I was out like, there was no need for me to hate. Like, during that time when a magazine might say, you know, make it look like I'm a hater or whatever, first of all, I got a house. Like, one of the questions that people tend to ask me, yo, you still live in Queensbridge? I find that kind of insulting in a way, or like, what are you insinuating? Like, dogs.
Yeah.
I had my album came out. I had my daughter was born over 10 years ago. I had a house before my daughter was born, and my daughter will be 12 this year. I had a house before then. I have a house. You know what I'm saying? Like, I got a 2-car garage. You know what I'm saying? I have a basketball court inspired by Chris Lighty. You remember he had the basketball court in the back of his house?
Yeah.
I got that same court. Like, I'm good. So so the hater thing just ain't me. And everybody that knows me, my man Jake Payne, he's an incredible, incredible writer. I'm pretty sure you guys know him. He's like, he knows me as a person. And he was like, Mega, you're shy. Like, I don't like attention. Like, I don't like, you know how some people want to be rich or famous? I just want to be rich. Like, I don't like, I went to my man Dayton's party, Dayton, which we all know, a few years ago. He was surprised I was there. Like, and Payne compares me to Basquiat. He was like, I'm glad you made that song because that's who you remind me of. You're a recluse, like you're reclusive. I don't like attention. I'm the type of dude, I never even knew how to talk to girls. You know how guys have a lot of game, yo baby and all that? I never knew that. I never was like that. Like, I just lucked up because girls always liked me. So I was like, okay. So it's like, I'm not an attention seeker. I don't want to. So all of that bull crap, I'm not like that. I don't drink alcohol anymore. I barely ever smoke weed. I don't even like Molly Ringwald. I don't mess with none of that stuff. Like, look, you had an interview with me today. I was on time.
You were early.
I'm so unrap-a-rap. I'm such a, my friend Mike Kidd, he's the funniest Jewish kid you'll ever meet. He calls me the anti-rapper. He's like, you're not a rapper, you're an anti-rapper. He's like, you keep your room. He calls me that and Felix from The Odd Couple. He's like, you keep your room clean, you're on time, you don't get high. He's like, you're not a fucking rapper. He teases me about that. So it's like, to me, they didn't know me. But they were trying to project an image like I'm some mad, disgruntled dude. Like, I'm sitting in Queensbridge, like the Mr. T grunt from Rocky. Like, I was in Queensbridge, yeah. Because I used to chill in the hood all the time. But I don't even do that anymore because there's nothing for me there. And even it came to a point when I had to grab myself mentally, like, what are you doing? Like, if I'm in the hood every day, cops start insinuating things that I'm... The cops was insinuating that I was giving people money to make moves. To do. When people start insinuating things that I'm not even doing, it's time to go. And then if I'm sitting on a block, I used to have a feeling... On my last album, before this, I said I'm no longer seeking acceptance. I used to feel like if I'm not going there or if I'm not doing stuff, I'm not keeping it real with the hood. And it's like, come on, man. As a man, I had to tell myself... Keeping it the best way to keep it real is keep it real with yourself. Mm. How I'm gonna keep it, how I'm gonna raise my daughter and be in the hood, or it's a conflict of interest. I don't even live in New York City. I live upstate, so it's like it's a conflict of interest. I can't be there and be here. I'm at the school bus with my daughter type, and you know what I'm saying. So it's like I stopped hanging the hood totally. So you know back then it was like the media was trying to project me as some angry dude, but it wasn't, or some angry dudes that's jealous of fame. You got the wrong character. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. Everybody that knows me will agree wholeheartedly with what I'm saying. I don't like fame. I love the fans and I love the money.
Do you consider yourself a studio rat? Like, what's your process in recording?
I've never been a studio rat. Even when I was on Violator, I never was a studio rat because I'm very observant. And one of the biggest wastes of money that you could do is be a studio rat. Unless you got your own studio.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I used to go to the studio and see numerous artists in the studio writing and smoking and then taking hours and hours and hours. And before you know it, you start getting invoices and statements. And it's like, damn, you spent $30,000 recording that album? You spend such and such thousand on studio time? So I said, I'm not going to do that. So what I do is, one of my secrets to writing, there's a few ways that I write. One is off inspiration. I like riding a bus lately. Like, I like the bus and I like the Amtraks, those type of trains, because when you ride and you see the cinematics of that area and it makes your mind wander. So I like doing stuff like that. And sometimes I just write with no music. I just write how I'm feeling. I like that. Also, if somebody sends me a dope beat, that's an incredible beat, I'm just going to write to it immediately. So that inspires me. And then what else? Hearing great music. Sometimes you hear something that's just so great. Sometimes I hear something that's just so great. It makes me like, wow, I want to be, you know, I want to make something epic. Like, that's greatness. Like, I got to try to be like that. So those are some of the things that make me write. So as far as being a studio rat, never that. And even when it's time for me to zone out, like, Large Pro will email me a shitload of beats, and I'll just go through the beats I like. And while I'm home, it's not much to do. My daughter's at school, so I'm just chilling. Take the beat, write. And I find that, And young artists and upcoming artists, I hope they listen and take my advice. I find that when you write in your spare time at home, it gives you time to analyze it and even make the appropriate changes. Mm. Sometimes when you're in the studio, especially if you're on a clock and you got an A&R such that we got to meet this deadline, what you say, you leave, you come back a few days later, your song is mixed and ready to go. So it's like, When I write at home, I get to perfect it more. Because, like, I'll write something, and I'll look at it, and I'll scrutinize it, be like, nah, and do some changes, or maybe throw the rhyme away, or alter it. And then I'll go to the studio and lay it down, and then I'm more happy with it, because I have more time to be with it. So I've never been a studio rat.
What is great music? Like, what do you listen to?
Great music. Marvin Gaye is great music. Bob Marley is great music. You got Beatles songs that are great music. I could throw in Rakim Pay the Full album, Tribe Called Quest, any album. Rakim any album. I wanna say like Rakim got a bunch of crap. Kuji Rap. All right, let me just say Juice Crew. This way I'm not.
Okay.
Juice Crew, Eric B and Rakim, Marvin Gaye, Sister Nancy, that's my favorite reggae lady. Barrington Levy. No Doubt. Guns N' Roses. Public Enemy, N.W.A. Slick Rick, Hey Young World. I can't. That song is like Pringles potato chips. Like once Hey Young World comes on, I gotta play. I can't eat. I can't hear it once. So it's like four times I heard Hey Young World. So it's like there's a lot of great albums. Queen, being affiliated from Queensbridge alone, I don't know how other artists see it, but I see it as I have to live up to a standard of tradition.
Everyone we've spoken to from Queensbridge has said the same thing. Marley said it. Nas said it. Large said it.
Look at the artist, but look at the people you're talking about. You have some people that think that they could just use that. They could. Some people try to use Queensbridge as a credit card. The artists that you named, those are innovators and groundbreakers. So they see it the way we see it. But some people just think QB, let me in. Like they got a QB ID card. There's some people that just use QB name and think that's gonna carry them. But it's not like that. It's like you have to. It's not about QB carrying you. It's about you carrying QB. It's like you carrying the legacy. So you have to work twice as hard for people to respect you like they respect a Nas or anybody from that Juice Crew era or that Mobb Deeps or the Natures or any of those artists. Because these artists put out a lot of great work and a lot of great impact. So it's like you got to live up to the impact or you just there. Like there's people that have... that have a couple of championship rings that we don't know their name. They just so happen to be at the end of the Spurs bench or the Lakers bench or the Bulls bench. I don't want to be at the end of the bench. I want to be on the floor producing.
Mm. Prodigy said it too.
Yeah.
I know that you want to get to Large.
Yeah, just your relationship with Large Professor. I know that goes like it's a long relationship.
Okay. Large Professor's like fucking Warhol. Mm. Like he's an eccentric genius. Like, I've always admired Large Professor. He's one of my favorite producers ever. To be honest with you, there's a few people that he came in with, like that group of producers that get all the recognition. They get more recognition than him. Honestly, I think he's better than all of them. But this thing that separates them from him is their work ethic and their drive. Whereas Large Professor has no problem disappearing for years, and he does things differently. But his music, if you look, I recently told somebody I think he's the best, to justify it, I said, well, listen to those producers, listen to the music that they put out recently, and measure it by the stuff Large Professor's done recently. And if you haven't heard any of his recent stuff, listen to all my stuff. That's it. That's him. So I'm like, he's incredible as a producer. He's incredible. Working with him is like I compare him to the Zen Master. It's like he's not afraid to engage the artist I've never been pushed like that ever. Like, nah, Mega, nah, that's not it. Do it over. Or when you become an artist, you have to set aside your pride and your who you think you are shit and understand that you're working with a master. And I had to tell an artist that before. I had to tell Killer Shaw that before. Rest in peace to Killer Shaw. Because he's complaining about Large keep making him do his vocals over. I said, Killer Shaw, I said, that's the same guy that told Nas to do vocals over or told Coogee Rap to do vocals over or that did had Rakim doing vocals. I said, the fact that you're even working with him is something you should be very honored about. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So if Large Professor tells you to do something over, do it over. So... initially, there was not going to be a Large Professor mega album. That was just an idea floated. And then the song Industry was going to be for my album that I have another album in the stash that I didn't finish. So I did the song Industry, and then I was like, wow. Let me rewind it a little bit. The last album was Born and Raised. We did the song Journey on Born and Raised. The feedback from the fans was incredible, especially for that album. So now let's fast forward it to I'm working on my new album and I do Industry for my new album that wasn't this. So then I said, you know what? So then we just floated the idea like maybe we should do that. Maybe we should do our joint. So I was like, all right. So I stopped doing my other album, mm-hmm. and then we started working on this album. And then this album took long. There's days when I wanted to kill Large Professor because, like I said, he's unpredictable. Like Large Professor is the type of dude that right, I'll check. I'll talk to you later. All right, cool. Well, I'll see you later. I'll see you in a minute. That minute might be 4 months. So it's July right now. Like, you know, Lars could disappear and I'll see him again in September. But when he come back in September, it's going to be so incredible what he has, you know, that it's like, all right, put aside your little your hostility that you have from him disappearing or whatever. When he comes to the table, it's going to be epic. So working with Lars Professor was definitely an experience, but it was something that I'm real proud of. I just think he's a great. He's a great guy. He's a great guy, and as a producer, I think he does not. There's no way on earth that you could tell me he gets the props he deserves, because I don't see it. He does not get the recognition he deserves.
No, he doesn't. I agree with you. Yeah.
Partly because his name is not as good as your name. I'm just saying. I've always thought that about him. Like, I wish his name was a little bit catchier.
Well, he has like five names. I mean, Extra P.
P.
The Mad Professor. The Mad Scientist. He doesn't like being called a Mad Scientist, so never call him a Mad Scientist.
Noted.
And, you know, it was fun working with him. He likes cookies. I'll tell you the things he likes. He likes cookies. I've never seen a grown man like cookies so much. But, you know, he's when he's into something, he's in it. And I'm just, at the end of the day, I'm blessed that he did an album with me. I'm happy.
Well, so I asked you about great music, and it was a little bit of a leading question because you did not say that you were listening to anything current,
okay,
which wasn't super surprising to me. And, you know, it seems to me like on Industry and on a bunch of songs on the record, there's a little bit of generational recrimination, like this is not, the new stuff is not your favorite stuff. I don't think you're alone in that. Uh-huh. But there's a confessional feeling on this album that I haven't felt as strongly before,
mm-hmm,
and especially on the song Valuable Life Lessons.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
When you put down the industry stuff and the, you know, business stuff and start talking about your family, mm-hmm, that reminds me of, like, a more contemporary strain. And so I was wondering if you were listening to anybody that inspired that sort of heart-opening stuff?
No, not at all. Heart-opening stuff, I've never need to listen to anybody for... I recently read the autobiography of Marvin Gaye, and I found similarities with myself and him. Not in artistry. I'm not going to sit here and dare put myself in the same...
You're
caliber.
Not Drake, you mean?
Yeah, I'm not Marvin Gaye, no. I'm talking about he used pain as canvas, and it's almost like he wanted to be in pain. You know what I'm saying? Like, because some of his most brilliant work was that. So it's like...
You mean like Here, My Dear?
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's genius when you think about it. And it's like, to a song like Valuable Lessons, I didn't need to listen to nothing. I listened to my aunt. Like, I listened, like I said, my sister calls my cousin calls his mom, but nobody calls me and I'm the topic. Or the last verse is about, you know, personal stuff with my kids' mom or whatever.
We loved harder, fought harder. If we fought as hard for love, we'd be much stronger. You wanna argue about what I didn't do, yet ignore what I did. When you accused me of cheating, it was only a guilt manifesting itself as a result. You'd rather hate me than be mad at yourself. Now you free, we no longer trapped in lies. You'll never find happiness until you happy inside. We've been up, we've been down, we laughed and we cried, but through it all I showed you I'm a provider. Now you taking me to court saying you need support for your living expenses. Really, how is this? You get advice from women who senseless with no life, so they wanna get in my business. Ignorance can't match infinite wisdom. It's supreme over weak schemes and hidden agendas.
All these lessons that I learned only mean one thing. I just want to live my life.
Stuff like that, you need no inspiration for. I mean, when I'm going to court, when I was going to court, or when I'm hurt by my family, or, you know, I recently told one of my cousins, what happened to Corey? Like, it's only Cormega, but what happened to Corey? What happened to the guy that you just loved for as a person, as opposed to this quote mega shit. Like nobody cares about me. I'm supposed to just care about everybody. Nobody says, how you doing? They just want to know how much they could get. You know what I'm saying? So it's like stuff like that. If you listen to all of my albums, I've always tried to be, I've never been afraid of showing a vulnerable side, because that's what artists do. And what do I got to lose? Somebody saying, oh, you're not street? Like, show me somebody that's street, and then show me their street resume and compare it to mine. And then you'll be silenced, and I'll be able to do what I'm doing. So it's like, I'm not in character. I don't have to be a mean mug dude all the time. I like having fun. I like engaging the fans. I like regular stuff. I like X-Men comics. I like Dave Chappelle. I like Chris Rock. I watched BET the other day just because Chris Rock was on there. I like simple stuff. So it's like, that's what forced that song Valuable Lessons. It was life. It was like the stuff that was happening made that song come out. If my family didn't do the stuff they did, or if my friends didn't do the stuff they did, that song would have never existed.
To me, it's a riskier song.
It is risky. Because
in the industry.
It is. It definitely is. The likelihood of me being invited to some family barbecues has been lessened, but it is what it is. I don't think that's going to be my baby mom's favorite Cormega record either. But at the same time, I didn't disrespect her. You know what I'm saying? It was said, I was speaking how I felt, and it was...
I felt it. I went through a divorce, so I heard that. I was like,
You know what I mean?
You know? I was just like, Like, I identify with you.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that was definitely a risky record. Like I told you, there was risk on this album. I just wanted to be an artist, man, because sometimes we're robots. Sometimes artists are robots. It's like, oh, man, so this how it's going, this how they doing it, so let me do it like this. Oh, this who's hot, I'm going to do stuff like that. I don't want to be a robot. I want to do me, you know what I'm saying? So that's this album, I just said, fuck it, let me just do me.
Well, I really like it.
I really appreciate you liking it.
Thank you for coming in and for taking all this time.
No problem.
For driving in and then taking the train and to meet your kids is cool too.
It's all good. It's all good. I appreciate you guys.